The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
When North Korea and the U.S. last sat down at the negotiating table, they agreed the North would stop all nuclear activities. But since then, Kim Jong-il unveiled a nuclear enrichment plant that brings the communist nation a little closer to a nuclear bomb. He claims it's intended for peaceful purposes, though. And that will probably top the agenda when the U.S. sits down for a couple days with North Korea next week to resume the talks that ended in 2005. Americans are also hoping to win permission during these talks to continue their search, halted years ago, for some 7,900 American soldiers who went missing during the Korean War, most of them in North Korea. Joining us now, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. And you can find a link to his Washington report by visiting our website, thetakeaway.org. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Flav.
You know, we've been flirting around with possibly returning to these talks with North Korea for a while. Is it possibly the bad economy that's pushing North Korea to come? Is it a chance that the sanctions are working?
You know, I would doubt that. I mean, certainly the economy in North Korea, which has been awful at many times, is particularly bad now. And, you know, you've heard many reports of starvation and so forth. But my suspicion is that it has more to do with the fact that North Korea has succeeded at one of its sort of minor goals, which was to split off Russia and China from the rest of the countries that were conducting the six-party talks. And they've been pressuring the U.S. and South Korea to get these going again. And while it all sounds fine to get them going, and certainly far better to negotiate than not, the reason for hope here is pretty slim. Because you'll remember those great scenes at the end of the Bush administration where the North Koreans looked like they were blowing up parts of their nuclear infrastructure at the Yongbyon nuclear plant and moving forward. But even before President Obama came in, they took a hard turn toward new nuclear development. And you'll remember that 3 months after President Obama was sworn in, they set off a nuclear device, their second such test. And then they revealed a year ago a new nuclear enrichment plant. And, you know, this isn't like Iran, where we're wondering when they could get to a bomb. North Korea has the bomb. They've set off two tests. The U.S. just doesn't want to acknowledge right now that they're a nuclear power.
Well, all right. We're speaking with David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. I mean, granted, when you hear the State Department saying that these are exploratory talks, I even read one person who said that they hope to at least set an agenda for future talks, which is, as you say, pretty slim margin for success there. But at the same time, it also said that they think these talks could avert a crisis. How will these talks keep North Korea from aggressive military action against South Korea?
One of the forms of thinking on this is that the two big actions against South Korea last year, which included the sinking of the Cheonan, a South Korean naval ship, and then the bombardment of a South Korean island, were in part an effort by the North Koreans to get attention and to force other countries, including the U.S. and South Korea, back to the table. And maybe that was it. But you'll remember that at the beginning of this administration, when Robert Gates was still the defense secretary, he kept making the point that it wasn't worth going back into negotiations if the purpose of those was to give the North Koreans again a set of conditions in return for giving up nuclear equipment and nuclear technology that the North had already agreed to. I think that the secretary said, we bought that horse once. And that's still the dilemma that the Obama administration is in. They have bought that horse already.
Is this a dilemma, though, David Sanger? I'm hearing you say that if we looked at the timeline, North Korea ramps up its escalation against South Korea. Time goes by. Suddenly, the six-party talks idea that's been at the center of U.S. policy is completely dead. We're back to bilateral. This is a huge backdown by the administration. Am I overplaying that?
You know, it depends on whether it's a backdown or not, depends on how this plays out. The administration has said consistently, I think since President Obama came in, that they were willing to conduct the six-party talks as long as North Korea complied with everything they had agreed to up until this point, and that you're not using these talks to go reopen issues that were settled in 2005 or 2006. And what we don't know yet, and maybe we'll know this after the meeting in Geneva next week, is whether, in fact, the North Koreans are willing to re-up to all of those agreements, or whether they want to start this process where it was 7 or 8 years ago.
We're speaking with David Sanger, who's chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. And so, David, there's also a number of discussions, I guess, being bandied about over the replacement of the U.S. envoy. They had a Korean specialist there, Stephen Bosworth, and he's been replaced with Glenn Davies, who was with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Does that signal any kind of change in policy?
Well, there are a couple of things going on here. During the time that Ambassador Bosworth was the negotiator with North Korea, it was a part-time job for him. He's the dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And he could afford to make this a part-time job because there wasn't really a whole lot of discussion going on. Now it looks like they're going to enter a more intense phase, and Ambassador Bosworth, who, when I first knew him, was ambassador to South Korea, has said he can't do two full-time jobs. Glenn Davies, who's coming in, is the U.S. ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency and is an East Asian specialist as well from just his past as a diplomat. And the thought is that he would now put the energy into doing this full-time, and because of his IAEA experience, would know what kind of regime they have to get the North Koreans to sign up to. You'll remember that the North Koreans threw the IAEA out several years ago, and there have been no inspectors back in the country for years. So we've lost the visibility about what kind of nuclear development they've done in the interim.
So there will be talks in Geneva for a couple days next week between the U.S. and North Korea, in which there are sort of amorphous goals. They hope to avert future crises. They hope to plan an agenda for future talks about nuclear disarmament. Much more specific goals for the discussions going on in Bangkok right now. Two countries are talking about the nearly 8,000 American soldiers who went missing during the Korean War. One of them was Richard Down's father. He went missing in what is now North Korea on January 13th, 1952. And Richard, you've been involved in this struggle to restart the search for American POWs and missing in actions for years, I understand.
Oh, yes. Yeah, since 2005.
Which is when the search ended, when they stopped bringing back remains. At this point, how many, with 8,000 soldiers still missing, what kind of hope do you hold out that your father will be among those who that you could find some trace of?
Well, there's so many facets to it, and my father happened to be Air Force, and the Air Force losses are a little bit different from many of the other losses because the planes went down. We don't know where they all went down. A lot of the men who are lost were lost during big battles that when the Chinese entered the war and overran U.S. troops, and we weren't able to go back and get the guys we lost. So many of them are on battlefields and in prisoner of war camps that we're hoping to get at in this, in terms of getting remains, in terms of learning about what happened to the flyers and other Army and Marine MIAs. It's a little bit different thing because the problem is we just don't know what happened to them.
Well, you've been trying to piece together the last days of your father. What do you know?
Well, it's interesting you say that because that's kind of the heart of it, whether it's my father or any of the guys, is trying to piece together and spending the bulk of your life trying to do that because no matter how hard you try, it just never goes away. We know that the plane went down and two men survived and they were captured, and we just don't know what happened to my father and another flyer, Airman Campbell. So that from that point on, it becomes speculation. We just don't know. He could have gone down with the plane. It's hard to think about and understand because the plane wasn't just shot down and diving. It was just the engine stopped and it kept going. So, you know, the two fellows that were captured were kind of put under a lot of pressure, as you can imagine, to sign germ warfare documents. And one of the conditions was that if they didn't sign, they wouldn't go home. So you sit and speculate, well, what if my father was captured and decided not to sign for whatever reason? And there were men taken with special technological, it's pretty much proven that men with special technological expertise were taken to the Soviet Union. And we just don't know what happened to them then. So that's kind of the problem. You sit and speculate. And
it seems like it's the uncertainty that has kept you with this for so long. Richard Downs is president of the Coalition of Families of Korean Cold War POWs and MIAs. His father was shot down, still missing in action in North Korea. So Richard, it sounds like there's still sort of this glimmer of hope that he may have survived the crash, that he may have been taken as a prisoner either in North Korea or in the Soviet Union and have survived the end of the war, the armistice.
Oh, yeah. The glimmer is the right word. It's because you don't know him, because he's your father, and you grow up with the, as you mentioned, the uncertainty, the idea that he could walk through the door at any time. You always entertain the possibility that he may have lived. Of course, now, by this time, even if he and any of the other guys had lived, you know, they'd be so old that many would have passed on just naturally.
I mean, in a sense, Richard, it is your hope that is more alive than, what remains are likely for those 8,000. And I'm just wondering, and again, you know, far be it from me to criticize your crusade here, but really, you know, the reputation of the North Koreans in dealing honestly on nuclear matters, let alone these family matters, don't you worry that maybe you're opening yourself up for a kind of open-ended, bit by bit, tantalizing offer of tiny little details of hope that then the North Koreans can use as a bargaining chip in their tortured relations with the United States, and you may never learn anything, but the North Koreans will get a lot out of this.
Well, actually, it's been the United States that has been kind of deflating our hopes, because the North Koreans have been inviting us back in. You know, it became kind of a concern of ours that these were being, that the humanitarian remains issue was being kind of used as a sanction to kind of get North Korea back to North Korea talks. Early last year, North Korea came forth and said that during their agricultural operations, they were uncovering remains of American servicemen, and offered up a photograph of a dog tag of one of our guys, and said to the Obama administration, what do you want to do with them? You know, come get them. And basically, as we've been doing through the Bush and Obama administration, our administration policy basically said, well, take care of them until we decide what to do. Well, meanwhile, the elements are attacking them. And, it's like they're just out there on their own. We've got to go get them.
You're like a political pawn on both sides.
So we're just hoping that these talks coming up will get us back on track, and that some families can find answers, because it's the answers that we're looking for now.
And were any of the soldiers after, say 10 years after the armistice, have any of them been found alive?
No.
So a slim hope for Richard Downs.
I don't know that any of them would be in North Korea that would be alive. There is live sighting reports. We just don't know, because they can't get in there.
Richard Downs is president of the Coalition of Families of Korean Cold War POWs, MIAs. His father was shot down in 1952, still missing in action in North Korea. Richard, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
If you had a loved one, perhaps MIA or a POW in North Korea, if you are somebody who lives with uncertainty, give us your reaction to the talks now going to search for American soldiers. 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can post your comment to thetakeaway.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.